So I'm calling to order this meeting of the House Workforce, Labor and Economic Development Policy and Finance Committee, maybe Finance and Policy Committee, I guess. Representative Dave Pinto, the co-chair. And then I'm going to run because I have a bill up in another committee, and I'm going to turn the gavel over to my co-chair, Representative Baker, Chair Baker, and then I think Vice Chair Greenman will be coming in just a second. So Chair Baker, we will swap out, and I'll be back in a little while, everybody. Enjoy your time here, and welcome to Youth Day at our committee.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome. We're going to change agenda now. No, we're not. Just kidding. I was just like, no, you're okay, Joe. Sorry, yeah, meeting adjourned. Yeah, no. So, again, happy to fill in until Vice Chair Greenman will step in, and then I'll relieve her after the bill is probably finished, if that's all right, to everybody. Again, I want to welcome everybody. First order of business is we've got to do the minutes from yesterday, March 19th. Representative Frazier, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from yesterday? And would you make a motion for us, please? Thank you very much. Any member questions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are carried from yesterday, March 19th. Members, today we have a busy schedule, so I think that Chair Pinto has asked kind of like a 7 or 8 minute per bill time frame. So really keep your testimony tight today. Carl will be kind of raising the cards if you're getting a little bit long. We just appreciate the ability to kind of go through a lot of these. So Representative Pete Johnson, if you'd come forward and have the first bill with House File 1936. These bills today will be, again, held over for later consideration. So welcome to your committee, Representative, and members. And so please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Chair. Do you want to move House File 1936? Thank you to the chair and committee members for the opportunity to present this bill. This bill provides funding to support the Minnesota Alliance of the Boys and Girls Clubs in their statewide youth job skills and career development programs. With 63 club sites serving over 23,000 kids across Minnesota, the Boys and Girls Club play a critical role in providing safe, supportive environments for youth after school and helping them build the skills they need to succeed in the workforce. The Workforce Development Initiative of the Boys and Girls Clubs is focused on job exploration, career development, and skill building to ensure young people are prepared for future employment. This program not only provides early exposure to career pathways, STEM learning, and job-seeking skills, but also connects youth to real-world work experiences through local partnerships and on-site job opportunities. The program strengthens workforce readiness and creates a reliable talent pipeline for Minnesota businesses. This funding is all a smart investment that also requires a 25% match from non-state sources, leveraging those private-public partnerships, and includes areas across the state, including sites at the Red Lake and White Earth reservations, the greater Minnesota communities like Bemidji and Rochester, and urban neighborhoods in areas like Minneapolis and St. Paul. But I have three testifiers here today. I have Brian Donaldson, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Alliance, C.J. Jackson, Club Director for the Jerry Gamble Boys and Girls Clubs, and then King Cha Zhang of Boys and Girls Club alum from St. Paul.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Donaldson, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Donaldson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs. House File 1936 continues the longstanding partnership between the state, DEED, and the Boys and Girls Clubs in Minnesota to assist youth in preparing for careers after school. The bill provides $2.5 million in the biennium to continue and meet the expanding need of youth to be ready to enter the workforce before and after they graduate. For over 15 years, Minnesota Boys and Girls Clubs and DEED have partnered to provide crucial youth workforce training. This established collaboration demonstrates a sustained and proven commitment to developing Minnesota's young workforce. Our partnership has a proven track record of equipping youth with skills needed for evolving job market. 95% of club teens tell us they have the necessary skills they need to be successful in the workforce. Our programs focus on both technical and soft skills, recognizing the importance of a well-rounded skill set. In the past year, the clubs have expanded to meet youth and their needs where they are now, with new clubs in communities like Black Duck, Minnesota, North Minneapolis, and in Rochester. With this investment, we will be able to serve more youth in new communities and better help link up with targeted career pipeline partnerships and advanced career path navigation. To tell us more about how these programs work in the clubs is the director of the Boys and Girls Club Jerry Gamble branch in North Minneapolis, C.J. Jackson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you for having me here. My name is C.J. Jackson.
I am the branch director at Jerry Gamble Boys and Girls Club in North Minneapolis. We have year-round programming, and we have started a workforce readiness pilot helping youth explore careers and they get hands-on experience on how to retain employment in their interest field. This funding would help us create similar models across Twin Cities clubs. We've also invested in a navigator tool called Pathways to Careers that ties to industries and gives youth real-time data about their career interest. And to speak more on it, you can show.
Good morning. Before I continue, I want to thank the committee chair and the committee members for this opportunity. My name is Kang Cha Zhang. I have been a member at the Eastside Boys and Girls Club for more than 3 years. And now I am a club alumni. In those 3 years, I have learned new skills from the workforce development programs that the clubs have offered me. Each of the programs, like Career Launch, Money Matters, and Diplomas to Degrees, have taught me how to prepare for the future. Extra events like Great Futures Fair and field trips to companies and colleges have helped members connect to jobs we find interest in and where to begin. Before graduating high school, I had already made a decision in what I wanted to major on because of the programs and support from the Boys and Girls Club. I am currently a freshman in college, majoring in HVAC with the Carrick Scholarship that the club has helped me achieve. Without the Boys and Girls Club, I would not be where I am right now. I can proudly say they are the reason for all my success. The workforce development programs do help youth and young adults just like me in this room succeed, discover careers, and prepare us for our future. I am living proof. Thank you.
Thank you, and good morning. Sorry, I was a few minutes late. Members, are there any questions for Representative Johnson or the testifiers? Quiet group. Representative Johnson, do you want to close up your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1936 is about investing in Minnesota's future workforce. The Boys and Girls Clubs provide young people with the skills, experiences, and connections they need to succeed in their careers. This funding ensures that youth across Minnesota have access to job training, career exploration, and real-world opportunities, helping them build the confidence, stability, and path to success. With a proven track record of preparing young people for the workforce, the Boys and Girls Clubs are a trusted partner in developing Minnesota's next generation of workers and leaders. I urge your support on House File 1936 and look forward to more conversations. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. The chair lays over House File 1936 for further consideration in a future bill. With that, we are on to House File 849. I know we're going to have a bunch of folks leave, so give you a little bit, folks for 849, we'll give you a little extra time just to get the transition. Thank you all for being here. I know. Usually you don't get folks who are here for 8:15 and then leave early. It's an early morning. Representative Kozlowski, you have House File 849. Do you want to move your bill?
Yes, I would like to move the bill.
Go ahead.
Great. Chair Greenman and Chair Baker and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity on Youth Day to present our bipartisan bill. House File 849, this is seeking funding for a new initiative coined the Duluth Promise Initiative, and it's really going to be a transformative investment in the future of Duluth students, workforce, and economy, but also for our entire county in St. Louis County. In Duluth, we say we're a city on the rise, and as we work together to adapt and evolve and ensure our region's trajectory continues upward the workforce challenges and making sure that we're being responsive to business needs, but also supporting and growing our students is really critical. We know that those two are tied intrinsically together. And so we're proud to bring this plan of action forward that's designed to create an equitable access to education and career pathways with our local employers and ensuring that every student, no matter their background, has every resource and every opportunity to succeed and that scaffolding to success. So we're going to jump into the Duluth Promise. Before I turn that over, I just want to highlight that this will provide really critical support for that early career exploration and getting folks exposed early, connect to our workforce development and post-secondary opportunity. Here to speak to the impact of this initiative and how it's already having a stronghold in our community and an all-hands-on-deck approach with our local employers, our nonprofits, all of our higher education institutions, as well as our local governments coming together. I want to hand it over to John Magus first, who's our superintendent of our schools and going to talk about the career readiness. We also have somebody testifying from Zoom, Dr. Barbara McDonald from our local college. And one of our members was sadly struck with illness, and so Dr. Charles Neese from UMD will not be able to join us today.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. And before I turn it over to you, Mr. Magnus. I need to move the bill. So Representative Kozlowski moves that House File 849 be brought before the committee. And let me turn it over to you, Mr. Magnus.
Great. Thank you, Vice Chair Greenman and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today about strong support for the Duluth Promise, as outlined in House File 849. My name is John Magus, and I serve as superintendent of Duluth Public Schools, and I'm here to express how important this initiative is and how it represents critical investment in our students, our workforce, and our future. And I also want to thank the bipartisan group of authors who have introduced this bill. In today's rapidly evolving economy, the pathway from education to employment must be clearer and more accessible and more aligned with workforce needs. The Duluth Promise provides exactly that: a seamless bridge from high school to higher education and career opportunities. It ensures that every student in our school district, regardless of background or financial means, has access to the resources, training, and support needed in today's workforce. The Duluth Promise is at the heart of House File 849, introduced by Representative Kozlowski, Johnson, and Zalesnikar. This bipartisan legislation would provide critical support for Duluth Public Schools, our partners, including our school district, the College of St. Scholastica, Lake Superior College, University of Minnesota Duluth, the City of Duluth, Duluth Area Chamber of Commerce, and APEX, which is our economic development group, as well as the Workforce Center. All of these partners working together to guide students towards fulfilling their careers. This legislation is directly beneficial to our students in several key ways. It'll expand dual credit and technical training opportunities, allowing high school students to earn college credits and industry certifications while still in high school. It'll also provide robust career counseling and mentorships, strengthen partnerships with local employers, and reduce financial barriers to education and job training. Our local economy, as you know, is dedicated to preparing our workforce, and Duluth area businesses such as Cirrus Aircraft, Essentia Health, and others are very eager for this training opportunity that this is going to provide. Through the Duluth Promise, we can make sure that we're equipping students with training, skills, and necessary experience to fill these high-paying, high-demand roles in healthcare, manufacturing, technology, and the skilled trades right here in our community. This is not just an initiative. It's an economic investment in our workforce development strategy. It's a common sense, bipartisan approach to aligning education with economic growth, ensuring our students have the tools that they need to be successful in our local industries. I urge the committee to support House File 849 and to help make the Duluth Promise a reality. Together, we can invest in our students, our workforce, and the economic future of Duluth. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Magus. I believe we have Dr. McDonald online, if you want to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. My name is Dr. Barbara McDonald, and I serve as the president of the College of St. Scholastica in Duluth. And I want to thank you, Vice Chair Greenman and Chair Pinto and Baker, for allowing me to testify via Zoom today You heard earlier that Dr. Neese is down, unfortunately, with illness. And unfortunately, I have COVID in my household, so I was unable to join you today in person for the sake of the health of everyone. So I just really appreciate this opportunity to talk for a few minutes about the impact that the Duluth Promise will have on Duluth and the region, and in particular, talk specifically about how higher education will play a role in that. I'd like to talk on behalf of my colleagues, Dr. Pat Rogers from Lake Superior College and Dr. Charles Neese from the University of Minnesota Duluth and the College of St. Scholastica. We represent three incredibly strong institutions that have very unique opportunities to partner together to provide pathways and stackable credentials for our students. The partnership with the Duluth Public Schools in particular will allow us to create pathways that are more specific, sort of a 2.0 effort to collaborate together to provide very important opportunities for our students to get into the fields that are so needed in Northeast Minnesota, and particularly in the Duluth area. Those areas you heard earlier, business, technology, engineering, manufacturing, and of course, healthcare. Our colleges collaborate already in terms of shared programming and so on, but this effort allows us to work more closely with our workforce partners, our industry partners, the City of Duluth, as we create opportunities for early work experiences, internships, and mentorship for the students to keep our students in our region after they graduate from high school and after they graduate from college, and to provide that workforce for the region. So I'm very excited about this House file, and I think it's going to provide tremendous opportunity for the workforce and for the economy of our area. In particular, I want to mention our partnership, and it's been said before, with our business and industry folks. They're very eager for us to participate with them even further than what we're already doing. And so that will provide really unique job opportunities and pathways early on in a student's career while they're still in high school and while they're experiencing post-secondary education opportunities. So again, I want to thank you on behalf of my colleagues and really emphasize that this is truly a collaborative effort and that we are deeply committed to the Duluth Promise Initiative. So thank you for allowing me to speak today.
Thank you, Dr. McDonald. And I don't know if Representative Kozlowski warned you, but this is the Duluth committee. You have all members of the Duluth delegation here, so it's a good committee to be in front of. Member, do any members have any questions? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Kozlowski, as well as the testifiers and the list of people who are, frankly, I consider most of these folks friends who have testified today. I wanted to kind of ask about how this will be practically or functionally rolled out. When I look at this and I was listening to what it really does, it expands dual credit, expands access to career counseling, reduces financial challenges, and enhances connection to business. If there's anything that I know about Duluth and the greater area, it's that each of the entities that have spoken today or have letters in our packets, it's that you all are very interconnected already. So I'm curious about the practical nature or the functioning of what these dollars will do.
Sure.
Superintendent Magus.
Sorry, I didn't mean to speak to it right away. So I would say that this is an idea that we have, and it's an idea that we put in place in previous work when I was associate superintendent in Green Bay. So we've seen it actualized. And it's really taking a good idea and something that worked previously and doing it even better. You've probably heard a lot about career pathways before, but I think as you know, as we talked about, thinking about how we are getting all of these partners working together. One of the biggest problems with career pathways is there are good things that happen in small segments, but to have a whole cohesive program that's having everybody working together, that's going to need some coordination. So really this money is meant to assist in putting together that framework of coordination, and it will serve as an accelerant to the work that we need to have done. I think a lot of times career pathway programs, thinking about the work with industry, a lot of times it's thought of as a second thought. We go out to the business community and we go out to the trades afterwards and we say, hey, we could use some welding equipment, or hey, we would like to have some internships. But what we're doing this time is we're baking it in from the get-go And this money will help us make sure that that cohesion is there, that planning is there. And it's not something we just see as something beneficial to Duluth. This would be work, work similar was done in Texas, and it spread through the whole state. And that's the way I look at it for this, that this could be something that is beneficial to Duluth, but will have future promises being a change packet that can be implemented throughout the districts throughout the state.
Representative Schultz, follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess what I'm assuming here, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong here, what I see this as is probably 4 to 5 employees, maybe less than that, that work for the Duluth Public Schools that help create these connections. Am I understanding that correct?
Yes, so there would be a concern.
Superintendent Magnus.
Sorry. Used to our board meetings, I apologize. So it would be similar to that. There would be quite a bit of in-kind contribution of all the organizations, and there has been already hundreds of thousands of dollars of time, but this would be several people that would serve to facilitate and coordinate and really advance the work of this, as you have said.
Any further questions? And Representative Bate-Burke.
Thank you, Superintendent. So kind of going off of Representative Schultz, he sparked something. So these individuals that would be employees of the district is, or however it's structured, so when going out into these different career pathways, who holds the licensure who holds the licensure for whether it's work-based learning or whether it's a CIS class taught within the high school? And how are you? Does this help address some of the licensure challenges that we face in schools?
Would say
Superintendent Magnus, and I just for trying to get through all of these bills, so please to answer the question, but there's also hopefully an opportunity to follow up with you all afterwards if folks have more detailed questions. So Superintendent Magnus.
Thank you. Somewhat. So basically, I would say that this will help us examine where the bottleneck is with licensure, and it will allow us to have people working on it directly to find resolution to those points and to advocate for various resolution. There's nothing within the bill that necessarily clears things up immediately, but that is one of the results of similar work in other areas where there would be potentially future asks for clarification once we are focused on those pinch points. Thank you.
Thank you. And members, any other burning questions? Thank you, Representative Superintendent Magnus, Representative Kozlowski. Any very brief final thoughts?
Sure. Thank you, Vice Chair Greenman and members for the opportunity. Again, our young people are saying they want to stay here. They want to get connected. So whether that's leaving school at the automotive certificate to an aerospace, breaking into these really good paying jobs, they want to stay by the lake. They want to buy a home and invest in our community. And that's what this bill does. And this will be laid over. So I look forward to further conversation.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. The chair lays over House File 8. 4-9 for further consideration in a future bill. Because we have a member who's coming out of committee, Representative Elkins, I think we're going to move to 1957, and then on deck we'll have 985, Representative Hollins, but we're going to move up 1957 because I know you have a vote in transportation later. Okay, Representative Elkins, I see you have 1957, and I will move that 1957 be brought for the committee. I understand you have an amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, I have an A1 author's amendment that just clarifies that the funding for this would come out of the Workforce Development Fund.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. The A1 is before us. Can I just call for the vote? All in favor of adopting the A1, the author's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The A1 is adopted to 1957 as amended. Representative Elkins, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. this morning, I'm excited to share House File 1957 to provide $1 million a year to the Minnesota Technology Association, MinTech, to operate the SciTech internship program. SciTech was launched in 2012 to place college students pursuing STEM degrees from underrepresented backgrounds in paid internships at small businesses throughout Minnesota. Since 2012, there have been over 3,000 interns placed. In 2024, 64% of the interns were women or BIPOC, and 25% of the internships were located in Greater Minnesota. For every dollar invested by the state in wage reimbursement, private employers contribute $3.22 in wages to interns. Interns are placed with companies in biotech, engineering, IT, manufacturing, energy management, agriculture, and aeronautics. In your packet, you will find letters of support from students and employers from across the state detailing the profound impact of SciTech's internship program. With me today is Jeff Tollison, the president of MinTech, and Andrew Thomas, a former SciTech intern who, following the internship, received a full-time job, to talk more about the impact of the program.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Mr. Tollison, you want to start? Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Greenman. Thank you, Representative Elkins and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Tollison. I serve as president of the Minnesota Technology Association. And on behalf of all companies that rely on access to talent in the science, engineering, manufacturing fields, thank you for allowing us to present this bill today. A strong economy depends on a strong workforce. And across healthcare, agriculture, manufacturing, financial services, and IT, the demand for skilled STEM professionals is growing. And Minnesota must expand its tech talent pipeline to keep pace. Falling short will constrain our state's economic growth. Yet today, Minnesota lacks a homegrown pool of tech talent to fill these high-demand, high-paying jobs. This gap translates into lost opportunities for students, lost productivity for businesses, and lost tax revenue for our state. Minnesota's SciTech internship program is a proven solution to this workforce challenge. By connecting STEM students with paid internships at small Minnesota companies, SciTech strengthens our workforce while fueling innovation. State funding provides a 50% wage match up to $3,000, helping small businesses access top talent and develop their future workforce. Since 2012, SciTech has placed more than 3,300 interns at 672 small companies in over 150 cities statewide. In 2024 alone, 255 interns were placed at 123 companies across 58 communities, with 64% of these hires being women or people of color, helping to diversify and expand Minnesota's STEM pipeline. SciTech is a true win-win-win. Students win with hands-on paid learning experiences in startups and small companies they might not otherwise have exposure to. Employers win by gaining access to a skilled, diverse talent pool for which they can offer competitive pay. And importantly, Minnesota wins as we build the skilled workforce needed to continue to fuel the success of our innovation economy. As you learn more about the proven impact of the SciTech program over the last 12 years through the materials submitted in the testimony today, we trust you will see the value of continued investment in this important statewide initiative. Thank you for your time and support, and happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Tollison. Moving on to Mr. Thomas, if you want to state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I'm Andrew Thomas. I'm currently a cybersecurity student in a master's program at St. Mary's University of Minnesota, and I had a successful internship at SciTech last summer. A lot of people might assume that education will naturally lead to a relevant job, but that's not the case. I read that some 50% of people with degrees take jobs outside of their field, their desired field. I never got an internship during my undergraduate degree, and I also felt like I had to leave the state where I went to school to get a job. Fast forward several years, and I took the leap and started grad school. It's expensive, and it's a career change, and there's no guarantee this degree would necessarily lead to a job in that field either. I had been looking for internships and entry-level jobs in this field for about a year and a half and did not have any luck. SciTech provides this tiny piece of funding and connects the dots between education and job. I think funding the piece that connects education to relevant work afterward is perhaps the most critical piece in a job pipeline and might be the most overlooked. I think I'm better at school because I have a relevant job while I'm in class, and I'm better on the job because I'm taking classes. The company I interned with, Superior Managed IT in Arden Hills, is a company that is too small to have an internship program on its own, and it needs the help of SciTech. Its small size actually helps me learn a lot, and there's every indication that I was a successful intern because they hired me afterward, and I now have a salaried position there, as you mentioned. I would say that I have successfully transitioned to a career in IT and cybersecurity, and I don't think I could have done it, or at least as smoothly as I did with SciTech's help. As an employee of Superior Managed IT, I now help about 80 companies in Minnesota with their IT and some aspects of their cybersecurity. To recap, I would say there's every indication that I'm successful at IT and cybersecurity. SciTech helped me get started, and I can't recommend it enough. I would like other people in the future to have the same opportunity that I had, so please continue to fund this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Any questions, members? I have a quick question just in terms of the, and this might be to you, Representative Elkins, or to Mr. Tollefson. The funding that that you're requesting, does that, and I see it goes to the program, is that going directly to the to paid internships? Can you describe sort of how the resources are spent in terms of how it affects the students directly?
Yes, Mr. Tollefson. Happy to answer that. Most all of the funding is the wage match that goes to employers. We do have two staff members, one that's focused on a lot of the employer outreach and recruiting, one that attends a lot of career fairs and recruits the roughly 1,200 students that are part of the program each year.
Thank you, Mr. Tollefson. Representative Zlesnikar.
Thank you. My question is there any language that with an internship that the recipient has to remain in Minnesota for a certain period of years if they're a recipient of it?
Mr. Tollefson?
Yes, there is no requirement that they remain, but we've had roughly 85% of the students that have been part of the program have stayed in STEM careers, and I think 84% have stayed in the state. So I think those numbers speak for themselves in terms of the retention that we're seeing in terms of the SciTech alums.
Representative Zlesnikar? Nope. Any further questions? With that, I will lay 1957 over. Thank you, Representative Elkins, and your testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks for visiting. On to Representative Hollins, who has been patiently waiting since 8:15. But if you don't have an 8:15 committee, welcome. This is every day for us. And thank you to your testifiers. So I will, as you get to the table, I will move that House File 989 is before the committee. Representative Hollins, you want to proceed, introduce your bill and proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for recognizing that 8:15 is hard for me. It really is. thank you, Chairs Greenman and Baker and members of the committee for hearing this bill. I want to also take a second to thank the co-authors of the bill who are in the room right now, Representative Hussein and Representative Frazier. This bill would appropriate $400,000 in the first year and $400,000 in the second year to 30,000 feet. If you don't know 30,000 feet, it is a nonprofit organization that serves as a hub for educational and workforce training in St. Paul. 30,000 Feet's new facility is opening in June. It is fantastic. If you haven't had a chance to tour it, I really recommend you do. And it's in my district, literally like two blocks away from my house. And this new facility is going to allow them to host more young people than they've ever had before. The work that they do at 30,000 Feet is important to my community because they connect youth with apprenticeships, job training, paid internships, and career placement, providing them with opportunities that might not otherwise be available to them. They use student progress reports, parent surveys, and third-party research to be continually evaluating and improving their programming. Today, I have brought the co-founder of 30,000 Feet, Vanessa Young, and a student here who can talk about the programs a little bit and what they offer.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. Ms. Young, you want to introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony?
Yes, absolutely. Hi, I'm Vanessa Young, Director of Programs, and thank you, Chair and Committee, for your time for our testament. I'm joined here by Michael, who will also share more about his experience and his future plans. I'm here to request continued funding to support and expand our programs, which provide meaningful opportunities for youth to develop essential skills and prepare for the workforce. With funding provided, we've been able to invest in direct staff, train and support over 200 impoverished youth with wages and our Earn and Learn program each year, with the range of students being from public, alternative schools, and even online participants throughout Minnesota. And we've done this with a hybrid approach. Our goal is to ensure that all of our participants receive competitive and equitable pay while they gain hands-on experience. The need for these programs has grown significantly, and we currently have a wait list of eager students to participate, reflecting the increasing demand for workforce training and career development opportunities. With additional resources, we can expand our pipeline and provide more youth with the tools that they need to succeed. Our programs do more than just provide job opportunities. We equip them with a broad range of essential skills to prepare them for success in both their careers and personal lives. These include job training and soft skills development, helping them to understand workspace expectations and adapt to professional environments, resume building and interview prep, ensuring that participants are prepared and confidently pursue future opportunities, job shadowing, and internships, as she mentioned, particularly with health partners, offering real-world exposure to technical and non-technical careers like project management and IT support. We also teach them about dress and workplace etiquette and logical thinking and problem-solving skills, just really trying to equip participants with critical thinking abilities to help them navigate the challenges and make sound decisions. Thank you again for the money that you've given us, and I'm happy to share how we used it in more detail or at a later time. Without further ado, I'll go ahead and pass to Michael.
Okay.
Proceed with your, introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Michael Maceda. I am a 16-year-old, and I've been a part of the 30K Feet program since last fall. This program has provided me with a stable income and something safe to do after school. Emphasis on the safe part, because with all the unsupervised time I had after school, I was getting involved in unsafe situations throughout St. Paul. But after I joined 30K Feet, it created a safe third place for me, and I have learned how to code with 3 coding languages, learned how to behave in a workplace, and how to communicate with my higher-ups, and to communicate with my peers. This program has provided all the students with a visit to Health Partners, where we networked with professionals and got to improve our interviewing skills. I stay with this program because it pays well, it encourages me to try new things, and meet new people. The tech program encourages me to think past my time with them and to think about post-secondary education and careers. 30K Feet has staff that guides me and other students to other programs and internships. I believe that other students should have this opportunity that I am so grateful to have. 30K Feet has changed my life and it should remain able to change more lives onward. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Committee, for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Maceda. Members, any questions? Chair Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, thank you for the bill. Just a technical thing. It looks like the draft is in the wrong fiscal year. Did you catch that? I know this is being laid over. We can fix that later, but I wanted to make sure the author knew about that.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Baker. Yep, I did catch that about 24 hours ago. And so we are aware, but because it was being laid over, we figured we'd be able to change it.
Thank you. Just want to make sure you're aware.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Hussein.
I don't have a question, but I've been in 30,000 Feet, and Vanessa Young and Kevin Robertson are doing a wonderful job within our community, empowering our young generations, and I want to thank you for the great work that you're doing.
Thank you.
And if you haven't been there, I would suggest for you to go visit.
Thank you, Representative Hollins, and thank you all for being here. Thank you for your testimony. It's great. With that, Representative Hollins, you want to close your bill?
Yeah, I'll be really quick. I just want to highlight for folks that the east side of St. Paul actually makes up one-third of the entirety of the city of St. Paul, and yet it's been historically disinvested in. So having this organization on the east side is really important because these kids don't have anywhere else to go. And so we want to make sure that they keep being able to do the good work that they're doing. So I really appreciate the committee hearing this bill, and hopefully you all can support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. And I'll note, you live very close to here, so A15 is probably not that hard for you, but welcome. Thank you for being here, in all seriousness. I lay over House File 989 for further consideration in an omnibus bill. With that, Representative Coulter, House File 1130. Thank you, Representative Coulter. Welcome to the committee. If you want to, I will move that House File 1130 is before us. And if you want to introduce the bill, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I want to apologize for being late. I hope those of you who have young kids at home understand why that happens from time to time. But so I am really, really excited to be here to present House File 1130, which would provide $300,000 from the Workforce Development Fund to support workforce development efforts by the City of Bloomington. You all know it doesn't really take much to get me excited about talking about things happening in Bloomington. But the most significant piece of those efforts is the Bloom in Bloomington Internship Program. This connects young people, focusing on young people who face barriers to employment, ages 16 to 24, with local employers, public and private, arranges summer internships, provides them with career exploration opportunities, work experience, and leadership development. And I always, part of telling Bloomington stories, reminding folks that we are the home not only to some incredible small businesses and some incredible public partners like the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge, but we're also the home to the corporate headquarters for Toro, Donaldson, Health Partners, Dairy Queen. There's just a lot going on in Bloomington. And so I think we are really uniquely positioned to develop the future workforce needs that exist within our state. And this also fosters year-round collaboration with employers, other partners, educators, and really just most importantly, eager young people. So I'm going to stop talking now and let my testifiers do the real work.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. Ms. Bergren?
Thank you, Chair Greenman and Baker. I'm Kim Bergren, and I serve as the Community Development Director for the City of Bloomington. Thank you for giving us the opportunity today to talk about workforce development needs in Bloomington, along with our Bloom in Bloomington program. Bloomington, if you don't know, is the fourth largest city in the state. And one unique thing about Bloomington, in addition to what Representative Coulter was saying, we do have 90,000 residents, and we also have 90,000 jobs. So a lot of jobs available to connect our residents and other people in the region too. Our motivation to expand to have local workforce development programming comes from the conversations that we have with the business community, where they continue to express their greatest need is connecting with the future talent that will be needed to make their company succeed. The Bloom program is intentionally designed to expose young people to well-paying career paths in all types of industries, including manufacturing, government, and professional services. Our employer partners for this summer include companies like Seagate, Polar, Larkin Hoffman, Wilderness Inquiry, and TKDA. We are especially excited about the opportunities to support the chip manufacturing industry with this program, as we know this is part of the state's Drive for Five initiative. We hope that these additional resources will allow us to expand the number of employer partners in our program and create additional internship opportunities that will have more opportunities for young people in future years. Many of the young people that participate in this program are people that would not have these types of access opportunities and also would not have the opportunity to connect with the professional networks that exist in our community. The last thing I want to highlight is that Bloom is a program that is designed to leverage private sector funding, the private sector employees and the other public employers that participate in our program do pay the wages for the interns.
Thank you. And Warsan Atan, if I pronounce that right, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you all so much for having us. Good morning, Chairman Greenman, or Chair Greenman, excuse me, and members of the committee. My name is Wasson Artin, and I am currently in the temporary role of overseeing the Blooming Bloomington program. As part of this temporary role, I oversee the Blooming Bloomington program as part of our economic development work. This means that I coordinate intern orientation, employer training. I match interns with their employers, and I also support both employers and interns throughout the internship experience. The Blooming Bloomington program is going into its third year, and this year we were able to double the number of intern spots from 15 spots last year to 30 this year. So it's a growing program. This is because of our connections with local employers and schools, including Normandy Community College, which is a very important and a close partner. The demand for this program is extremely high. This year we received 118 applicants with only 30 spots. So that is almost four times the amount of spots as there are applicants. We hope that with these funds, we can double the program next year and in 2027 to support the demand that we're seeing from our young people. We also hope to explore ways to support workforce development, as we know this continues to be a priority for both state and city leaders. Once again, thank you so much for the opportunity for this opportunity and for considering our request, and we will be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Representative Coulter, and to your testifiers, looking at this, since it is a City of Bloomington initiative, can you share with us in terms of the total program cost, what percentage is from the city or local private investment versus that which you're seeking from the state?
I think Ms. Bergman can.
Ms. Bergman.
Thank you. Thanks for the question. The program costs are evolving because we continue to try to ramp up the scale of the program. Last year, the city sustained the program primarily through existing staffing. Most of the program costs for the city are just staffing costs to do the coordination and the support and programming for the young people that are part of the program. So in previous years, we were able to sustain the program with existing staffing. This year, because we wanted to double the program, we brought on a temporary staff person, Worsen, as she described. And we would like to create a permanent position to continue to be able to leverage the relationships with the private sector. I'll also share that the city hosts many interns. And so this year we've committed to hosting 15 interns and at a cost of about $100,000. And we anticipate to continue to do that.
Representative Schultz, any follow-up? Any additional questions? Representative Hassan. Hussein. Hoden was around yesterday. Representative Hussein.
We don't have Hassan here. We have Hussein from now on. Thank you, Madam Chair. And we do have this program in St. Paul. It's called Rate Track. Is that similar to this program?
Yes. Yes,
go
very
ahead.
Similar. And we are connected with Rate Track. I met with one of their staff recently. So very similar program.
And how
Representative Hussein.
How did you guys get to underserved community, and how do you reach out to, and what percentage is your numbers for the kids that you recruited?
Ms. Satan.
Yeah, thank you so much for your question. So once again, the program is growing, and it's a fairly new program. The program kicked off in 2023, and we had 8 interns, and then last year 15, and this year we're going to have 30. And because of that, we're still collecting the data of the breakdown when it comes to demographics data. However, we do target low-income students. So, for example, when it comes to our connection with Normandale Community College, we present their TRIO program for first-generation students. In our public schools, such as Kennedy High School and Jefferson High School, we reach out to AVID programs in order, again, we want to be intentional about reaching out to young people who are from underserved communities and first-gen students.
Representative Hussein, any follow-up? Thank you. And members, any additional questions? Representative Coulter, close your bell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I realized in my excitement about all the things happening in Bloomington, I forgot to mention the chip industry that is rapidly growing and has received significant federal investment in recent years, and Normandale Community College, which is the largest Minnesota, largest two-year Minnesota MinState institution that is also located in Bloomington. So I think, you know, that just really illustrates how Bloomington is so uniquely positioned to really develop and address some serious workforce needs. And I'm just so excited about how this program has taken off. When I was on the city council, we were kind of just beginning the conversations about that, and then I left to come here. But I think it's just a really, really unique opportunity and will pay really, really good dividends for our workforce needs here in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. With that, I will lay over House File 1130 for further consideration. And that brings us to Representative Frazier. I think we're back to committee members. Representative Frazier, House File 1223. And Representative Frazier, if you want to move your bill, welcome to your committee.
Go ahead and move your bill. Chair.
Representative Frazier moves House File 1223 to be in front of this committee. Go ahead with your bill presentation.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, committee members, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to present House File 1223. Just for a second, I want folks to walk with me for a minute. Imagine a 12-year-old named Marcus who has big dreams but no clear path to achieve them. Growing up in a community where opportunities feel just out of reach, he longs for guidance, someone to show him the way. That's where Big Brother's Big Sister steps in. Through their mentorship program, Marcus could be paired with a mentor that can help him explore career paths, develop job-seeking skills, and connect with educational opportunities. Now, for 12 years, Big Brothers Big Sisters has been transforming lives like those of folks like Marcus's, reaching youth across the Twin Cities, Central and Southern Minnesota, with support from the Workforce Development Fund. House File 1223 seeks to continue this impact by securing $1 million in funding, ensuring that more young people facing adversity can build strong, lasting relationships with mentors who guide them toward success. Because every child deserves a path forward and a caring hand to help them along the way. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to testifiers Pat Sukum, CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters, and Princess Awa Ada Kassab, Vice President of Programs, Big Brothers Big Sisters.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Let's start with Pat Sukum. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, I'm Pat Sukum. I'm the CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters Twin Cities. I want to thank you all for your time and consideration. Thank you, Chair Pinto and Chair Baker, for hearing the bill today, and to all of our authors, including Representative Frazier and Representative Mecklen. First of all, as I've done when I've been here before, there are so many incredible organizations. We're hearing about them today, and I understand that that's not necessarily how governing works, but I really hope you can support us all. We all rise and we all lift together, and you can hear all of our connection through all of our testimony today. As Representative Frazier said, I'm here representing the three Big Brothers Big Sisters agencies, so here in the Twin Cities, Southern Minnesota and Central Minnesota. Together, we are the largest mentoring organization in Minnesota. I'm also a mentor in the program. We heard about Marcus a little in the program. I'm a big. I was matched 26 years ago. It's been a lifelong relationship. He was the best man in my wedding, my widow. I would never be in this position as CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters Twin Cities without that transformational impact in my life. Getting back to the three agencies, last year we served 4,500 youth all across Minnesota. That's a 10% increase from when I was here 2 years ago, speaking to you about the same topic. With that said, we still have a wait list of over 1,000 young people waiting for a mentor, waiting for a big. The research speaks to our work. There's numerous studies from the Office of Juvenile Justice, the CDC, Department of Education, the World Bank. They all speak to the power of youth mentoring, stronger mental health, avoidance of risky behaviors, greater academic performance. This past year, there was also a large, long-term, 30-year impact study released in conjunction with the Department of Treasury and Harvard University. It spoke to increased graduation rates, higher college enrollment, less teen pregnancy, and less incarcerations. Their big finding tied to IRS data was that youth mentored in Big Brothers Big Sisters earn 15% greater lifetime earnings. If you think about that, we're here today to ask to maintain the funding we received 2 years ago, and that was $1 million. That $1 million within that study equates to $23 million in additional earnings in the pockets of Littles, right? Think about that generational impact, right? The impact in community, the impact in local economies. It's incredible. Harvard noted it as one of the most efficient youth intervention strategies for its cost basis. Through the funding that we received 2 years ago, we were able to stabilize our program post-COVID and, as I demonstrated, grow the program. And this includes our college and future readiness in terms of financial literacy, career interest and exploration, college tours, financial aid support, increased access to scholarships. It's absolutely increasing skills, and we all know the power of relationships and increasing your network. You need both sides of that to achieve future success. In the Twin Cities, we doubled the number of youth attending college and future readiness programs. Many of these are in connection to the largest corporations and institutions in our state because they know the power of investing in youth and that directly tied to their future workforce. Best Buy, General Mills, Cargill, Federated Insurance, Dairy Queen, the U, St. Cloud State. You've heard of all of them. We recently also expanded to Olmsted County or Rochester, right? So the expansion of our footprint. We already have 50 youth that are being served there, and there are already 50 youth on that wait list. We also know that we have an influence in the community with a bigger brand, and a lot of our families will reach out to us for additional social services. So within the last 2 years, we also created a team that looks to connect our families to resources, many of which you've heard today, but mental health, housing, food insecurity, additional programming. We know the role we play in that ecosystem. Maintaining this funding will allow us to continue to support our youth and to address those 1,000 young people waiting for a little, waiting for a big. We will be able to recruit more volunteers. We will continue to expand our program like we have done to work with those that are in less stable housing situations, programming for those youth on our wait list. And note that we continue to serve those youth that are the most unseen. 87% of the youth we serve in the Twin Cities are youth of color. To close, I just want to say thank you. From the tens of thousands of Minnesotans impacted by Big Brothers Big Sisters every year, we share our deep gratitude for your investment in our mission, in Minnesota children, in their fulfillment, and in their dreams. Thank you.
Thank you. And Princess Awa Ada Kassab, did I get that close?
You got it.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
All right, thank you. Good morning. My name is Princess Awa Ada Kassab. As I testify in front of all of you today, I'm the Vice President of Programs at Big Brothers Big Sisters Twin Cities. However, my story with Big Brothers Big Sisters started over 15 years ago. I was a little who was diligently matched with my big sister, Sandy. I remember the nerves of wondering who my big sister would be. I recall being pleasantly surprised when we were introduced. I learned we shared interests like baking, swimming, being outdoors, and show tunes. Beyond the things we had in common, my big was critical in challenging my growth, pushing me and supporting me to achieve my goals, big and small. My big helped me build confidence and trust myself. Big Brothers Big Sisters showed me the value and the importance of relationships outside of my family. I was encouraged to build social capital and networks that became instrumental to my ability to accomplish post-secondary education and later gain gainful employment. And it's not just me. As Pat noted, in a recent Harvard study, it demonstrates that youth in Big Brothers Big Sisters Twin Cities mentoring programs are 20% more likely to enroll in college. Big Brothers Big Sisters helped me realize my potential and ignite a belief in myself that I have the ability to actualize my greatest dreams. Since I was young, I always dreamed of helping serve my community. I knew early on I wanted to give space and opportunity for young people to chart a successful path for their future. Well, I suppose you can say I made it happen, and it's truly due to the magnificent power of mentorship. Today, as I stated, I'm the Vice President of Programs at Big Brothers Big Sisters Twin Cities, and I'm so proud of the ways in which we support young people across the state prepare for college and their future careers. If you doubt the impact of Big Brothers Big Sisters Twin Cities, please remember me. Know that I'm only here today because someone invested in a little girl full of possibilities with many odds against her. Yet the power of mentorship dissipated those odds against me and built a bold path to a bright future. Furthermore, That same study has also shown that Big Brothers Big Sisters mentoring programs helps close two-thirds of the opportunity gap, leading to increased economic mobility and more prosperous communities for all. Thank you so much for funding college and future readiness programs at Big Brothers Big Sisters.
Thank you. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier, for bringing the bill. I was a big when I was a senior in high school in central Minnesota, my hometown of Upsala, to a Latino little boy named Angel, who was in first grade at the time. And I hope that that was a positive impact for him, and appreciate the program and the fact that it reached my very rural community, despite the fact that the central Minnesota location is in St. Cloud. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Zlesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill. I, too, have been a mentor for 14 years, and I think it's shaped my life more than it's shaped theirs, but my goal is to see them all graduate and get to the next level, and I think they'll do that. So thank you for all you do.
Thank you, Representative Zlesnikar. Representative Hussein.
Representative Frazier, thanks for bringing this bill forward. It means a lot to our community because it's transforming for many young, underserved community, black and brown. And Representative Schultz, I'm glad to see a program that you are aware of it. This is a wonderful program. Thank you for acknowledging.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. Any other big or little brothers or sisters on the committee? And I really want to say it's a sign of good organization then that participants in the program go on to run the organization, and that's a cool part of the story as well. Representative Frazier, do you want to close up your bill?
I don't think I can close it out any better than the things that were shared by committee members and their experience with this program, and the individuals sitting here with their experience, and look at where they are now. It's a good bill. Looking forward to further conversation to make sure they get the resources they need so that we can have more voices like this in front of us one day.
Thank you, and thank you for being here. With that, I will lay over House File 1223. For further consideration in an omnibus bill. Representative Frazier, I believe the next one is yours as well. House File 1907. And while your testifiers come up, do you want to move your bill?
So moved, Madam Chair.
House File 1907 is before the committee. Representative Frazier, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members, thank you for having me again for House File 1907. House File 1907 seeks to continue Minnesota's investment in workforce readiness for key youth populations, building on a successful program initiated in 2017, originally focused on Somali youth. The program expanded to serve East African and broader African communities. With increasing demand and youth prizes capacity building, House File 1907 aims to support youth across the African diaspora. The bill allocates funds to Youth Prize, which will distribute sub-grants through a competitive process to organizations providing economic development services. Funding will be evenly split between Greater Minnesota and the metro area. Due to time constraints, we're only going to have two testifiers, as we've seen in multiple bills before us. So I will turn over to testifiers Caitlin Cole, Director of Career and College Readiness, Achieve Twin Cities, and Christy Snyder, Policy and System Transformation Officer of Youth Prize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and everybody's following the rules so well. We're speeding through these bills. Christy Snyder, start with you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Greenman, Chair Baker, and members of the committee. My name is Christy Snyder. I am the Policy and System Transformation Officer at Youth Prize. And Youth Prize is an intermediary that is devoted to elevating youth voice and increasing equity for young people in the state of Minnesota up to age 25. I'm grateful to Representative Frazier for leading on House File 1907, a bill to provide funds for career development and work-ready skills for young people of the African diaspora all over Minnesota. As you can see from our one-pager, we've already served over 8,000 young people just last year through previous state funding by mentoring soft skills, so interviewing, work habits, and hard skills like industry recognized credentials. This is quadruple the number of young people we served the last time we testified in 2023. YouthPrize has a proven track record of administering funds to new and emerging community-based organizations to provide culturally competent bridges into the workforce. We deliver these funds by engaging young people and community members in developing the RFP and selecting grantees. The 26 grantees represent organizations from all over the state. You will hear today from Achieve Twin Cities. As an intermediary, we're able to provide the training wheels for they need to ensure that we meet the ongoing rigorous compliance measures. The coaching and support that we offer to organizations is vital for their future to secure more traditional workforce funding. We so appreciate you hearing this bill today, and I'm hopeful that we find our way into the inclusion of your final bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Caitlin Cole?
You've got it.
Go ahead. Say your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Chair Baker, and welcome back, Chair Pinto. And thank you to the committee members as well for the opportunity to testify for House File 1907. I'm Caitlin Cole, Director of Career and College Readiness at Achieve Twin Cities, which partners with Minneapolis and St. Paul Public Schools to provide career and post-secondary planning guidance for 17,000 high school students annually. We operate centers in 27 high schools. These serve as hubs for future readiness activities. Our experienced school-based coordinators guide students throughout their high school years, preparing them for apprenticeships, certificates, college enrollment, or workforce entry on pathways, toward high-growth careers. As the sole universal career and college readiness provider for our two districts, our services are available to all students with focused engagement with underrepresented youth. The African Diaspora Youth Workforce Grant supports our work with East African students. These students comprise nearly 10% or approximately 1,500 of our students. Many of our students balance being first-generation immigrants and maintaining cultural traditions while navigating challenging education systems. This funding allows Achieve to provide culturally responsive advising. Our staff, supported by this grant, provide individualized advising to help students and their families make informed decisions about post-secondary goals and financial aid while navigating interest-bearing loans that could prohibit some students from attending high-cost institutions. Take Ayan, an Edison High School alum who's now enrolled at Metro State and pursuing nursing. Her coordinator connected her with Bridge to Nursing, and through this hands-on mentorship program, Ayan discovered her career path and secured necessary financial aid. Consider also Heritage Academy. This year's seniors, supported by their coordinator Munira, have been accepted with full scholarships into competitive sonography and engineering programs at St. Catherine University and the University of Minnesota. We urge committee support for House File 1907, which would expand the population served to include a quarter of students that are reached through our programming. That would be up to approximately 4,300 youth. Notably, Black and African American students receiving support from our program enroll in post-secondary programs at considerably higher rates than those who do not. I thank you so much for your time and consideration this morning.
Thank you so much. That concludes your presentation, correct? Okay, yeah. I will see anybody from the audience who wishes to testify on this bill. I'm guessing not, but just to make sure. And I'll say now that I'm back, I'll thank Representative Baker and Vice Chair, Chair Baker and Vice Chair Greenman for chairing in my absence. Any questions or comments anybody has? Representative Hussein, pardon me? Is it Representative Hussein does? Yeah, Representative Hussein. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair Dave Pinto and Representative Frazier. I am familiar with this program because YouthPrize at Cary for the last 2 years, and it is a very successful program that is empowering the African Diaspora Youth Workforce Development Grant. I am very strongly supporting this program. Expanding this program will break down employment barrier, boost economic mobility, and strength our Minnesota workforce. So I want to thank you for bringing this forward. It is a lot of young kids throughout the state do participate and benefit. This is not only metro area, but it is the greater Minnesota. YouthPrize is the model that we need to support so they can empower our young generations. Thanks for taking my bill away. I'm just kidding. Mr. Frazier, I'm 100% supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. Maybe I'll other questions, comments from members at all? Going to see. We're ahead of schedule. I gather there just weren't as many questions from members. And boy, it's hard, Mr. Chair, isn't it, to schedule kind of to figure exactly how to fit in the bills to the time. This is a burden to figure out. And so I'm going to maybe just I'll take a minute or two to sort of ask a couple of things that are connected to broader points. Could you just talk with us about the structure of how the grant works with Youth Prize? I understand it's a direct appropriation Youth Prize, and then you sort of run essentially a competitive grant program from there. And members, you'll recall, members of the audience as well, that this is something we're sort of thinking through, this issue of kind of direct appropriations versus competitive grants. This is, I think, an interesting structure. But you talk about how it works for Youth Prize first. Somebody, I'm not sure, Ms. Snyder, perhaps you? Not sure. Please.
Yes. Thank you, and Chair Pinto. So we do have a competitive process. We work with young people in helping to design the RFP and then also with community members from around the state. So we had 9 young people and 12 community members from around the state that helped us to design it, score all the RFPs, and then ultimately select the grantees after we go through a risk assessment for every person, every organization that was going to be selected.
And my apologies if you'd said this. It's probably is on your sheet. How many? Okay, 26 organizations were able to fund and receive 65 applications. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Let me think. Yeah, maybe that's. I guess that probably covers it. And so I think I'd spoken to you previously that you'd found even in discussions with Dee that structure seem to work well, that you all, because again, it is a little bit unusual that you receive a direct appropriation, then you turn around and run a competitive grant. I don't know, can you talk further about sort of the advantages as you see it of that? I guess I heard you hear a little bit of that. I heard you say a little bit of that right now, that the community involvement in choosing the recipients. But if you just talk a little further, Ms. Snyder.
Sure, thank you. First of all, we believe that young people should be at the table for every decision made, and so that is a critical component that we're able to bring. We also have the olds that show up too, those that are not young people anymore, so they get to participate as well. But it also helps young people to see the whole process and how the state funds move. We also believe in like strong compliance, so these are organizations that have not yet been successful in Youth at Work and other kind of traditional deed state funding. So we're able to provide coaching. We meet with grantees monthly to make sure that they have the compliance documents needed, that if there's questions, we do regular desk audits. We also do site visits, but we're able to wrap around a lot more compliance for newer organizations, emerging organizations, community connected organizations that need to make sure that they have all the compliance down.
Okay. Yeah. And Chair Baker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I appreciate the questioning, because this is a unique situation here. I remember carrying the bill for Youth Prize a number of years ago, mm-hmm. and you have grown a lot.
Yeah.
And what's unique about this is, I think, is what Chair Pinto is getting to, is you're granting other grants. My question is, as we are all under this very intense umbrella of credibility and making sure that the money that is being spent is going to organizations, is the agency walking alongside of you with certain checkpoints when you re-grant out some of this money? There has to be some accountability to all of those things. You're trying to get down to the most organic kind of organizations, and they're new, but they have to be looked at and examined like anyone else. Help us understand how the agency, if they are involved, kind of oversees or helps you see the newest of the new, to see that they're going to places that actually can deliver what they're telling you to deliver.
Ms. Snyder, I think it's probably to you.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Baker. So first of all, DEED is incredibly involved, and we appreciate their support. So we have regular meetings with DEED staff and help them understand our process, make sure that they also understand how we're re-granting. We also think deeply about risk assessments. So before anyone is awarded a grant, we go through a deep risk assessment, and then we develop a technical assistance plan based on their risk assessment. So if they've never received a grant, they might have like a lot more up in their grills, so to say, so that they can make sure that they are able to meet the compliance standards that the state holds and that Youth Prides holds. We are committed to these funds going to young people and seeing transformational differences in their lives, which is why we have young people at the table always, but also to make sure that the money is doing what we need it to do. So we're very committed and work in alignment with DEED on that. But I do think what's different for us is that we're able to bring young people to the table and to have them at every step of the process, which is what I think makes us unique. We're able to bring in the coaching on compliance so that other organizations can eventually get the DEED Youth at Work funds or other funds that DEED offers.
Chair Baker, follow-up?
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. Thank you. That's a good answer for that. My history has been with, especially the last 6 years or so, with the Opioid Advisory Council. I have learned deeply about how, when we receive like the opioid settlement dollars, the ORAC Council grants money out, and we are always constantly relooking at our processes to make sure that it's not overly cumbersome, but we have to make sure that all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed, because we do not want to be on the headlines, right? We don't want to end up where we didn't manage this thing properly. The questions that we've learned lately is, are they getting money from any other sources from the state of Minnesota or other areas? So I'm sure you're covering a lot of that. There's a lot of people that are asking 5, 6, 7 different ways. We just want to make sure that, again, our role and our responsibility for as policymakers is to make sure that it is being handled every step of the way to very credible organizations. And again, Youth Prize is doing just that. We need to make sure that we once in a while bring this up. And again, I want to appreciate the chair for bringing this up. This is some good conversation. So thank you. And it's again, appreciate you being here today.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. And I don't mean to be picking on Youth Prize in this. You just happen to be the people in the room when the guy who asked all the questions came back. So they all would have gotten questions too. It did strike me in your comments, Ms. Snyder, and this is maybe for members of the committee too, you talked about the importance of youth voices, nothing about us without us, right? Concept. That does make me think though that we should probably be doing that. I'm so glad that you're doing that. That's probably something where to the extent that DEED does have youth-focused grant programs, which they do, we should make sure that those programs have youth voices involved. Frankly, today's Youth Day, we've heard from young people in the grant presentations, but just sort of it's something where I'd rather not have to have an organization sort of bring it in as you are, but have it be infused in the work we do. And similarly, the coaching you describe, so it's just something I think an ongoing conversation to have. I did have one other question. The 50% going to at least 50% outside the 7-county metro, is that currently in the? I'm assuming that's currently in the the funding that's been going to Youth Prize. I'm not sure if you know that, Ms. Snyder, or maybe our staff does. But Ms. Snyder, do you know?
I do. It's not. I think it's like 25% Greater Minnesota. 50, like the rest was metro, and we just with the growth of applications, we want to make sure that Greater Minnesota is represented stronger. So that's why we have the 50-50.
Very good. Well, something we all care about, and I also think there may be a chair and other members who especially appreciate that. So that's good. Good. Okay. Anything else from other members? And otherwise, I'll go back to Representative Frazier. So not seeing Representative Frazier. Final words on your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and also Mr. Co-Chair. I mean, I think the questions were right on, so glad you came back with all those questions ask them. Because I think anytime you have a great organization that has a good track record, anytime, any moment you get the chance to highlight that, it's a good thing to do. And to the back, just to that point about the 50-50 metro and Greater Minnesota, that's important to me because, as many of you all know, I spent time in Greater Minnesota. In the time I've been here in Minnesota, I went to the University of Morris, went to the University of Mankato, and I can see around this state, and as I've gotten to travel as an attorney with Education Minnesota around this state, the need is there around the entire state. I always tell folks there's need everywhere in every zip code in this state, and so this is vitally important that we're meeting that need for our young people, especially for those that are coming to this country, first generation, getting acclimated to how we do things here and culture. It's important that we have what they need to make sure they can achieve the best that they can. So it's a good bill. Looking forward to the conversation and hoping to get this wrapped into our final budget so that they continue to do the great work.
Thank you, Representative Frazier, and thanks to the folks at Youth Prize for your work and your testimony. With that, the chair lays over House File 1907 for possible inclusion in a future budget bill. And then I believe the last one is House File 1847, Representative Bakeberg. Representative Bakeberg moves House File 1847 to bring that before the committee. And once you get settled in, Representative Bakeford, please begin presenting your bill. Whenever you're ready, sir.
I didn't hear what you said, Chair Pinto.
Is that what you said? I was just saying, so yeah, what you moved the bill as you were walking up to bring it before us. And I was just saying that whenever you're settled in and ready, please begin presenting your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you, members. I guess we're batting cleanup. I'm a baseball guy, so.
I guess Representative Elkins was going to be the last one, but apparently he got moved up while I was on the other side of the floor. So,
Chair Pinto, I appreciate Youth Day and bringing in and really elevating the different programs around the state. And I think that's what we heard today is there's a number of programs that are really supporting kids around the state. So my name is Ben Baker. I have the privilege to represent the communities of Prior Lake, Jordan, a portion of Shakopee and the surrounding townships. And I'm here today to present House File 1847, which is an appropriation to Minnesota STEM ecosystem to be used to support STEM learning opportunities within workforce development, specifically within the areas of science, technology, and math. And those of us that work in educational spaces know that this is an area that we're continuing to look to grow. Just for the sake of time, Chair Pinto, I have a couple presenters here, and I'd just yield the rest of my time to them so we can stay on schedule.
Sounds good. Yeah, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Emily Sade, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota STEM Ecosystem. In 2023, Minnesota was ranked 11th in the RCLO STEM Growth Job Index. Yet in 2024, less than 35% of Minnesota's high school juniors were proficient in grade-level math. And that is the case and true across most of the state. This isn't a problem that higher education, K-12, business and industry, or after-school learning providers can tackle alone. But if we work together to align STEM learning with the needs of industry, we can do this. To be effective, it needs to be a public-private partnership that is driven by the needs of the workforce. The Minnesota STEM ecosystem was created to address this need. In 2022, the initial investment of federal funds was matched by the private sector to create a truly cross-system, cross-sector organization, including industry leaders, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, the Department of Education, the service cooperatives, and STEM program providers across the state, including museums, robotics, engineering, and coding clubs, to really create a robust platform to support our learners and our employers. Working together, we're able to braid resources, pairing public and private sector funding to multiply the impact of STEM learning and workforce development programs across the state. For example, we were able to leverage the Competitive Deed Grant to bring together Minnesota's largest robotics provider, our state college centers of excellence, and our service cooperatives to develop STEM career exploration programs, expand robotics teams, and provide STEM internships in Greater Minnesota. More than half of those internships were in advanced manufacturing, and those high school students are coming out with industry credentials and being hired. Medtronic donated more than $30,000 worth of VR headsets. We were able to pair those with cooperative lending libraries so they could be used for STEM career exploration in advanced manufacturing, engineering, and healthcare. Through a collaboration with the IT Center of Excellence and Nordson Engineering and Manufacturing, we'll be bringing computer camps free to students across the state this summer. I could keep going, but I know you want me to be quiet, and so I will be, but I hope you ask questions so that I can answer them, and I would be excited for you to hear from our other folks.
Now that I'm back, there will be questions. I can. So, please, and to the other testifier, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony, and welcome to you.
Thank you to the chairs. I'm Heidi Jelica Halverson, and I represent Medtronic, and I want to thank you for spending an entire day thinking and investing in our greatest Minnesota resource and asset, which is our kids. We are rich with kids, rich with innovation, and at Medtronic, we uniquely understand what can happen when one kid, one person is sparked with an idea, because that's what happened with Earl Bakken when he saw Frankenstein at a theater in Columbia Heights, and he went on to launch an entire industry. So I lead the experiential learning pillar of Medtronic Spark, our commitment to propelling 1 million scholars into health tech jobs. And I know you all have seen some of the research and analysis coming out of the World Economic Forum around the 11 million global healthcare worker shortage, the 4 million global tech worker shortage. Those numbers are relevant to Minnesota because Minnesota, as a healthcare leader, what happens here is relevant to the world. So when we think about Minnesota's business ecosystem as well as our ability to connect with great nonprofits that we have and really serve our kids, the Minnesota STEM ecosystem is uniquely positioned to be able to bridge that gap. Emily mentioned we've been able to make technology donations, programming decisions, and have a mapping understanding of where kids are getting programming and where kids are not getting programming. So we can be really strategic as industry partners in making sure our resources are well allocated. Through this ecosystem, we've worked across the lines of competition with our industry partners, our peers and competitor organizations to understand where they're investing, where we at Medtronic might invest, and again, where our kids are getting the resources they need to have self-determination in the career path they choose for themselves. So thank you for your time today, and we look forward to your partnership in the future.
Thank you so much. I think there's another testifier as well. Yeah, as you once you settle in, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. I'm Jason Bruns. I'm the director of the Minnesota State Engineering Center of Excellence, and I've been in industry for 25 years as a working mechanical engineer. I've been fortunate enough to be able to work with the STEM ecosystem to try to find opportunities that we can collaborate, especially after school and during school programming. And here today to speak about the importance of aligning these educators in industry, especially in a rapid evolving technology in emerging areas, your AI, your cybersecurity, those areas. What are we doing to make that connection? And through this, through the STEM ecosystem, we've been able to work together to really bridge the classroom teachings and these workforce skills needed, developing a curriculum connected to after-school learning partners and allowing students to apply their knowledge in real world settings. And that's really where we want to be, real world settings. A couple of examples working with the STEM ecosystem that we've been able to work with. We've created an educator externship. Now think of this. We're now taking our teachers, giving them the opportunity to learn in industry about the advanced technology that they're leveraging, and now you're influencing how many young people. So what a great opportunity that we were able to do as a joint venture with the STEM ecosystem. Another one from my years of industry experience, worked to be able to create industry curriculum called Lean and Lean Manufacturing. If you're familiar with it, that's outstanding, but it came from my years at GE where I was a Lean leader. We built out industry-relevant curriculum, then built it so it can align with our schools and educator curriculum, and then we merged it into after-school programming with hands-on, project-based learning where students can learn about industry-relevant content. Truly, Lean is a truly only organic means of business growth, and our young people are learning about it in after-school programs and collaborations like this. So from using a holistic strategy of developing workforce readiness programs to these students and integrating them in both classroom and after-school settings, we're ensuring the students receive a comprehensive education. And implementing this approach in various locations equip these students with technical skills, essential soft skills, and the teamwork that these industries are looking for. How to communicate, how to work together, and what are we going to do to make the operations run. So this is really a holistic approach. I think it's very important, and thank you very much for hearing my statement today.
Thank you so much. I think one final testifier. Looks like if you can identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Colton Melhoff. I'm an applications engineer and manager at Stratasys, which is the world's largest 3D printing company and, did you know, headquartered right here in Eden Prairie.
Stratasys is a proud sponsor of High Tech Kids and Starbase, which are two parts of the STEM ecosystem. Our sponsorship is not a donation, but rather is a long-term investment in our future workforce. I competed in the robotics programs under High Tech Kids from fifth grade through high school, and now have been the MC at these events for the past 15 years. I donate my weekends to these programs because it's the only way I know that I can repay the benefit that I, my teammates, and our workforce have received from these programs. The robotics programs I competed in, of course, teach students about CAD, technical writing, research, fabrication, and more. But what is more important to our workforce and to Stratasys is all the soft skills that these students are acquiring that allow people to work together. The STEM field needs people who have an appreciation for STEM and can work on a team to achieve a common goal. So at Stratasys, we are committed to driving innovation and growth, but we are increasingly facing difficulties in finding qualified STEM candidates to fill these roles. In 2022, nearly 40% of all job openings in Minnesota were STEM-based, with demand for STEM professionals expected to grow at double the rate of other occupations over the next decade. This proposed legislation is crucial to expanding the efforts that will help bridge the STEM skills gap. By providing essential funding, it will ensure that more students have access to these programs to strive in the STEM workforce. And I'd love to hear from one more. We have a student from one of these programs as well. It's currently competing.
Definitely do want to hear from the student. Yeah, we're tight on time, but this is obviously a high priority. So please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Greetings, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Carter Fellows. I'm a junior at Elk River High School, co-captain of robotics team 16917, the Gear Wizards, and I've been participating in STEM programs since fourth grade. I originally joined robotics because I wanted more engaging hands-on activities. Little did I know that not only I was getting these incredible activities, but I was also getting something that would bolster success for the rest of my life. Robotics has given me and countless others the opportunities to learn skills in design, manufacturing, 3D printing, prototyping, outreach, fundraising, marketing, organization, and teamwork. And these are just a couple of the many skills that students can learn while in these programs. Throughout my robotics journey, I have built confidence in areas I would have never expected, such as public speaking. The critical thinking, problem solving, and leadership skills I've gained through robotics have helped me all throughout my life, from school to athletics. One amazing opportunity that I got through robotics was to job shadow a principal engineer at Boston Scientific, helping me build connections with professionals in one of Minnesota's largest STEM industries, medical device. Not only did I get to see the incredible work that they're doing there, but I also got to see how what I'm doing in robotics directly relates to how they are saving lives through innovation. As someone who has spent thousands of hours trying to improve STEM programs across the state, I can tell you that it is impossible to improve the accessibility to these programs without support from industry, nonprofit, and government organizations. As a student who has been directly impacted by these STEM programs, I ask for your support of this House file, which aims to make STEM education more accessible for students across the state. No matter what happens, I know that all of us here will continue to do what we can to improve the accessibility of these programs. So the question becomes, will you help us build the most prepared STEM workforce that Minnesota has ever seen? Thank you.
Thank you so much, and I think you've got all kinds of possible careers before you. besides robotics, there's all, well, absolutely, no, totally, all kinds of things. So thank you so much for being with us and for your testimony and your work. Is there anybody else in the audience who wants to testify, first of all? I think that's, we'll close that. A couple things we've got. Chair Baker is going to go represent Mueller's interested. Maybe I'll have her go first. Chair Baker, do you want to go, Chair Baker?
I just have a short statement, and again, I just want to say
Baker.
Thanks, Carter, for coming forward. You had a really great energized discussion. I've been on this committee for a long time, and what I've really appreciated about Representative Bakeberg's work on this bill, he has been talking about this since the beginning of this session. I was able to meet with some of his members out in his area, and they were talking about this then. I don't think I've seen a better, more leveraged program in my tenure here at the workforce about how you're literally working with every industry there is about this area. I have seen the students that are working with robotics come alive. I've been to competitions. I am amazed at what they're doing with those things. I can't thank the businesses in Minnesota that have really stepped up. And thank you all for doing that. Again, I really support this. It's a pretty good size ask, and it's going to be a challenge for us to find this as we kind of navigate through the end of this work. But I just want to say thank you for working so well together. Carter, you've got an amazing future. Thank you for what you're doing and the way you spoke today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Mueller, we'll go to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you guys for this amazing bill. I wanted to just say I have also been to the robotics competitions, and as an educator myself, this is something where I've watched them with their data notebooks and with their all of the things that they're trying and their carts and all the stuff. It's been amazing, and I have to say, since we're talking about robotics, and thank you for sharing, my nephew's now involved in it. I think it's amazing. But Southland with Vex Robotics has won so many competitions, and that's in my neck of the area. So thank you to supporting robotics, and go Southland Rebels.
Okay. Representative Johnson W.
Thank you, Chair Pintle. Thank you, Representative Bakeberg, for bringing this forward, and thank you for everybody testifying. This is an awesome program. I had an opportunity. My son got involved in robotics back when it was just starting, and it was basically you had to be so old to get involved and all that stuff. And now I went and visited the Math and Science Academy in Woodbury, and they invited me in to see their program and just how excited they were to show it, and not to mention the amount of levels. There's at least three levels that I saw, from the young to the smaller ones to the big robots, and the demand for of parents and students to get into math and science, their program or their school is doubling in size. And so it's just amazing to see that. And then I was able to see Monomedi. I went to the Monomedi High School, and seeing how businesses, as I was touched on, businesses are working with schools so that students are building things, and then businesses are coming in and advising them and judging them and providing with guidance. So programs like this are really the future. Kids are getting involved very young and are coming out with great careers with the help and guidance of businesses, which will fill their needs. So thank you for this.
Thank you. Representative Lesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep. Bakeberg. This is a fantastic program. I got to witness it in Hermantown. And St. Louis County and Lake County are very engaged in robotics and STEM education. So thank you. This is a great opportunity for students and fun competitions and pathways to great careers. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I have a few questions. Maybe I won't surprise you. So one question is the organization, how is it organized, the Minnesota STEM ecosystem? Is it I guess it's a nonprofit that's just like a 501c3, or can you just talk about what that is? It's Masayid, I think, was that? No. Yes. Okay, please.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Emily Said.
Said. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Said. Please.
Yes. Actually, we operate as both an LEA and a 501c3. We're integrated into the Minnesota State Service Cooperatives.
Okay.
So we are actually, our fiscal host is the Southeast Service Cooperative, but we work statewide. We opted for the service cooperatives because it allows us to be more nimble. We can move quickly. We were able to create partnerships with also the Minnesota State College Centers of Excellence and the Workforce Development Centers.
Okay, yeah, and so Representative Bakeberg, you may want to just be in touch with staff about kind of exactly how the language should be drafted, about if it's going to the right exact entity, that kind of thing. Second question is, I hadn't noticed this till just now. I think this is similar to Youth Prize that we just heard from, in that you would receive under this bill, you would receive a direct appropriation and then do competitive grants from there, which is a little bit unusual structure. And this is new, I believe. Youth Prize has obviously been around for a while. I don't know, any comment on that you can talk about sort of why that? Because, of course, that's a double level, right? So we've got Indeed going through a whole review process before giving money to you, and then you go through a whole competitive process. So you just talk about that.
It's somewhat unique, somewhat new. My background in career and technical education, I was the director of the Minnesota Foundation for Student Organizations, and that quasi-agency actually functioned that way, where we were the primary recipient and then funded the career and tech ed student orgs like your FFA and that sort of thing. And what this does is this allows us to, if you look included in your packet, there's an advisory council list that shows you who really has the oversight and would provide the guidance. But what this does is it allows us to look at and really pair the resources from industry and then also use state funding to fill the gaps in places where the programs, where industry funding, because a lot of times industry wants to support where they operate. So this allows us to again, be a little bit more nimble and fill those gaps. We obviously have compliance rules, and aside from that, basic compliance rules, I'm envisioning the structure to be reimbursement based, obviously with desk reviews, the same processes that went into the organization that I previously worked with. And on top of that, we also do best practice audits. And you can take a look. Our learning partners are also included in here.
Yeah. Thank you. I think this is then going to be my last question. How should we think about this bill in relation to overlap, difference, whatever, between this bill and the bill from Representative Elkins we heard earlier from Minnesota Technology Association? Kind of like...
Just to
sort of understand how those two might fit together or not or what.
Thank you for that question, Mr. Chair. We work, Jeff is a friend, and MinTech is one of our learning partners. Their internship program focuses and looks at a lot specifically on emerging technology and small businesses, and it's also centered around college. Our internship program is really driven by workforce needs is focused specifically in high school, and also, our emphasis is on Greater Minnesota. One of our most successful partners is actually Marvin in the northwest corner.
Okay, that's helpful. Thanks. I think that's all I would have then for now. Anybody have any other questions or comments? Otherwise, I'll send things back to Representative Bakeberg. Those are final comments on your bill, Representative Bakeberg.
Yeah, I want to say thank you to our testifiers. Thank you, Chair Pinto, for hosting Youth Day. Thank you, Carter. If you can't see it, he's got a fantastic pin you got to check out. Advertising.
He's got a great pin, too. My goodness.
But I think this just exemplifies an example of that public-private partnership and really getting industry into getting connected with kids and kids finding their pathways, and that's why I'm passionate about this project. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Bakeberg. And members, I'm going to take just a minute or two after I lay over the bill, so just to kind of, if you're starting to pack up, just to recognize we're not going to rush out quite yet. But Representative Bakeberg, thank you so much, and thanks to the testifiers, especially Carter. Best of luck to you. I don't know if you're going to need it, though, because you seem to be on a fabulous path. So thank you so much. And with that, the chair does lay over House File 1847 for possible inclusion in budget bill. And then, members, I did just want to direct everybody's attention, as long as we're on Youth Day here. Chair Baker knows I'm pretty relentlessly focused on the budget because it's coming up fast. There are several competitive grant programs in the agencies we oversee that relate to youth programs. There's the Youth at Work program at DEED, Minnesota Youth Program at DEED, Youth Build at DEED. The Youth Skills Training Program at Dolly, we actually heard that, I think, on yesterday with Representative Bakeberg's bill, or maybe 2 days ago that was. No, it was yesterday. In any case, so just sort of we want to be educating ourselves on what programs are out there. And, of course, we're the legislature. We can change those programs. We started in the first place. We can change them. So just we want to be thinking together about how we want to structure things and certainly be in touch with Chair Baker and me as we're having those conversations. But I just kind of want us to be thinking about that. Anything anybody wants to say or ask questions about before we're done, then I'll go to Chair Baker for any preview he wants to provide for next week. Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you again, Mr. Chair, for that. Good hearing today. Thank you. We got a lot done today. Just a preview for Tuesday, members. It's going to be kind of a sports day. Today was a youth date. Tuesday will be a sports day. We're going to hear from Explore Minnesota Tourism. They're going to hear their overview of their agency bill and requests. We're also going to have a special guest on Tuesday because we're going to be talking about the World's Junior Hockey Tournament coming to Minnesota in December. And that is a really big deal. I didn't realize what a big deal it was until I talked with my friend now, Lou Nanny, and he'll be here Monday to talk about that with us. I think he'll be zooming in with us, but it's an important story to hear. And then also Special Olympics. So we're going to be talking about an important program there, too. So with that, Mr. Chair and members, I look forward to seeing you guys on Tuesday.
Thank you, Chair, for the preview. And members, certainly be in touch. I'm not sure if folks are still watching who were presenting bills earlier. I know a number of the members are. But do be in touch with us again as we're thinking about this issue of how we allocate funding, whether there might be competitive grant programs that applicants might be eligible for versus not. Let's continue to be in touch about that. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.